who's a doctor, who's sick, who's next? Never you mind, that's professor, electrified. My love is better, it's crystallized, so mine could be the diamond confused with who's next.
Any static, take it up with Bleak.
Bleak, two E's, one K.
Right now, I'd like to bring to the stage a fine musician, as well a very dear friend. Please give a warm welcome to Mr. Bleak.
And welcome to Exquisite Corpse Radio. This is CITR 101.9 Vancouver. Tonight, gonna be taking you on a field trip with me. Somewhere I haven't gone before with you. And I have several different hobbies. Different being the operative word there. But one of those is the fact that I am into antique radios and phonographs sort of thing. I don't have a lot of money for my collection, but a couple years ago I purchased a phonograph, which was made by the Edison Company from about 19... trying to remember now. Well, we'll get to that pretty soon here. Let me just tell you about that. It is a Edison Diamond Disc player that when I saw, I fell in love immediately. Last weekend, I got some of my diamond discs together from the machine and set up a microphone in front of my Edison phonograph and started to record. And that is what we'll be hearing this evening on Exquisite Corpse Radio. Yeah. So to start off, let's talk about an article written by Phil O'Keefe, and this can be found at edisonphonology.com. He writes, "In my opinion, Edison made the best cylinder phonographs on the market. However, by the end of the first decade of the 20th century, it became apparent that the public preferred disc phonographs, particularly the new internal horn, Victrolas, being offered by the Victor Talking Machine Company. Nevertheless, Edison stubbornly insisted that cylinder phonographs were superior to disc phonographs and balked at the idea of developing a line of disc phonographs to compete. Eventually, Edison reconsidered his position and he threw himself into a project to develop the Edison disc phonograph. Unfortunately, he waited too long to enter the disc phonograph market, which was dominated by well-established competitors with patents on their designs. Edison was forced to develop a disc phonograph unlike any others on the market to avoid paying expensive licensing fees and royalties to competitors. The result was the diamond disc phonograph and the thick diamond disc recreation record. Many of the components and operating principles of the diamond disc phonograph were borrowed from Edison's Amberola cylinder phonographs." Now, to start us off musically this evening, we are going to hear a track that I recorded off my Edison Diamond Disc player. It is one of the Hawaiian melodies. that they do many of. This is the Waikiki Hawaiian Orchestra from 1918. Okay, and that was Hawaiian Breezes Waltz with steel guitar and echo effect with words by Cyril McMeekin. I didn't hear any words. That must be the other track. Music by J.A. McMeekin. There you go. And that is an Edison Diamond disc from 1918 from my Edison Chippendale C19 phonograph. And that's what we're doing this evening on Exquisite Corpse Radio. And to continue further with our article here, the new Edison disc phonograph was shown in public for the first time at a phonograph distributor convention in Milwaukee in July of 1911. In late 1912, Edison finally had models available to sell to the public. The phonographs differed from the competition in that they had a permanent diamond stylus in a floating weight reproducer patterned after the diamond B cylinder reproducer. Like the diamond B, the diamond disc reproducer played vertical cut record grooves. The Edison diamond stylus was designed to track in a much smaller diameter groove than those found on competitors' records. Because of the small record grooves and the lateral play in the floating weight reproducer, the tone arm in the Edison disc phonograph was not moved by the diamond stylus as the record played. Although Edison disc phonographs had excellent sound reproduction and the recreations played longer than conventional 78 RPM records, they were expensive to manufacture and expensive to purchase. To help justify higher prices and gain a competitive edge, Edison commissioned furniture designers to develop attractive period cabinets to house his phonograph mechanisms. The result was a line of cabinets based on European designs from the 16th century to the late 19th century. These included Elizabethan, Queen Anne, Chippendale, and Louis XIV, etc. Mine is a Chippendale mahogany, and it is a top of the line unit. Let's hear another track from our Edison Diamond Disc. This is Hawaiian Twilight. I'm going to keep going with a Hawaiian theme here. Hawaiian Twilight Waltz. By Sherwood and Vandersloot from 1920 on Exquisite Corpse Radio.
Thank you. Well, the party is off to a good start. Guests are on time. Everyone's out to have fun and to help others fun.
What's the matter? Doesn't that sound exciting to you?
UBC students have an alternative. Looking to unwind? Check out one of the sub's two licensed establishments.
The Pit Pub and Burger Bar is home of the famous Pit Night. Relax with great prices on cold beer and lots of big screen HD TVs, or chow down on charbroiled burgers, beer battered fish and chips, and Belgian fries. The Pit is open 7 days a week, and Wednesday through Saturday is open late until 2 a.m. This business is owned and operated by the AMS, your student society.
The world is a wonderful and exciting place. And there are a thousand exciting things to do without experimenting with music of your own.
This is Vicky from People Like Us, and you're listening to Exquisite Courts on CITR 101.9 Vancouver.
And continuing on with our special edition Exquisite Corpse, and one of my hobbies, one of the loves of my life, antique phonographs, and the whole scene, baby. Although Edison disc phonographs and diamond disc recreations were acoustically superior to the competition, they were not popular. The major drawback to owning an Edison disc phonograph was that the owner could only play Edison diamond disc's record on it. It was possible to purchase an expensive adapter to play competitors' lateral disc records, which I have, but the results were often less than satisfactory. Another drawback was the relative higher prices for the Edison disc phonographs and diamond discs. The Edison machines were expensive because the motors were more complicated and reproducers were complicated to manufacture. Lastly, Edison insisted on personally reviewing and approving all of the recordings before they were pressed into the records. Edison's tastes in music and entertainment were deeply rooted in the 19th century when he was a young man. His judgment was also impaired by his poor hearing. As a result, much of the subject matter contained on diamond discs was outdated and not appealing to the tastes of the growing ranks of young urbanites, particularly before 1920. Nevertheless, sales were strong enough in rural areas to keep Edison disc phonograph production going until 1929. The next track we have in front of us is a very popular track by Zez Confrey. It's called Kitten on the Keys. Zez Confrey was born in Peru, Illinois, the youngest child of Thomas and Margaret Confrey. After World War I, he became a pianist and arranger for the QRS Piano Roll Company. His novelty piano composition, Kitten on the Keys, released in 1921, became a hit, and he went on to compose many other pieces in the same genre. This piece was inspired by a cat at his grandmother's house that he discovered prancing up and down the piano keyboard. Zez Confrey on Exquisite Corpse Radio, our special diamond disc show. This is me winding the record player up, dropping the needle down. Kitten on the Keys, Zez Confrey. This one is Laughing Love by Charles Gorst from 1915. Charles Gorst, Charles Crawford Gorst, Laughing Love, and that was a bit of a hit. Interestingly enough, here's another version of that song off YouTube. If you go to YouTube and look up Charles Crawford Gorst, there's a video to this, Laughing Love. It shows a woman dressed in sort of Victorian gear, and she is doing a striptease on a trapeze, and revealing not much for a stripper, I gotta say. And there's a couple guys in a balcony, what looks like a fairly well-appointed theater, and she's tossing things at them, and it's kind of silly, but it's fun. So go there, Charles Crawford Gorst. Now this is our Edison Diamond Disc feature. This is a machine that I own, and decided I'd set up a microphone and record these records. The Chippendale C19 Edison phonograph that I bought, luckily enough, came with 72 records filling every slot in the cabinet, which is down below. And came with some really nice finds, some of which are I'm playing tonight, some of the standout tracks. Now, there are 72 discs, mostly with two sides, and so there's a lot of music to go through on the 72 discs. Now, somebody printed up an interesting little warning. Let's put some music on. That was printed on one of the Diamond Discs recreation. It says here, warning, do not play this recreation with any attachment or any instrument except the Edison Diamond Disc phonograph and with the Edison Diamond Disc reproducer. If you do, you are likely to ruin the recreation. This record groove on the Edison Diamond Disc recreation is a long spiral having microscopic undulations which correspond to sound waves. The diamond point, which travels in its groove and actuates the diaphragm of the Edison Diamond Disc reproducer, is ground and polished by expert workmen and with mathematical accuracy to fit this groove and the track the same without cutting or wearing down the small undulations. Furthermore, this diamond point is mounted on a floating weight so designed as to cause the diamond to press down upon the record groove with the correct pressure sufficient for proper reproduction and not enough to cut or wear the recreation. Therefore, the Edison Diamond Disc phonograph is equipped with a mechanical feeding device for propelling the reproducer and preventing all lateral thrust and wear of the diamond point against the side walls of the groove. These features, which are indispensable to correct reproduction, are found only on the Edison instruments, and therefore, this recreation should not be played on any instrument except the Edison Diamond Disc phonograph and with the Edison Diamond Disc reproducer, and we decline responsibility for any damage that may occur to it if this warning is ignored. There you go. That's a little warning or disclaimer from the Edison Diamond Disc production company, I guess. This is Exquisite Corpse Radio, CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver, about a minute after the hour. Got more tracks from the Diamond Disc feature this evening. There's a couple tracks by Rachmaninoff, who I'm sure you've heard of. Rachmaninoff, a fine pianist and composer, successful composer. He's done a couple, he's played for the Edison phonographs for, he recorded, let's say. He did a Chopin and a Mozart tune. Let's hear the Mozart track right now. That's my wife. You can hear her in the back. Let me turn that up so you can hear that again.
Podcast listeners, are you getting a sense of what a geek Bleak is?
She says, are you getting a sense of what a geek Bleak is? You can agree with that.
Thank you.
Rachmaninoff playing a Mozart Sonata 9 theme and variations. And you can hear the noise of me. I decided to leave some of the noise of me taking the needle off the record and putting it back on again to give you an idea. Here is Rachmaninoff playing Chopin now. Stop it there. All right. Chopin by Rachmaninoff, Valse in A flat, Opus 42. I hope I said that right. I'm not so clear on some of these things. And that came off one disc. Those two came off one disc. Edison Diamond disc from 1919. And moving on, what can I tell you about Chopin, or Rachmaninoff? Let's tell about him. Made a few recordings for Edison in 1919, but from that same year until his death in 1943, he recorded for Victor. So this is just some of the things he did for Edison that first year before moving on. And I am blessed to have those in my collection of diamond discs, which are, they're thick records. They're about a quarter inch thick. They are 10 inch like regular 78s, which you can find almost anywhere. Diamond discs, very hard to find. Well, you can find them on, you know, there's eBay and stuff like that. But as far as me searching antique shops, which I do quite a bit of, I've yet to really run across any. I think I have in the past, but didn't know what I was looking at in those days. Shall we move on to something else here? I have a Walter Van Brunt, and he's got an interesting story I want to tell you about. Walter Van Brunt, there's a track here. It's another Hawaiian-style track, Yaka Hula Hiki Dula. Walter Van Brunt, born in 1891, was an American tenor known initially for his recordings on Thomas Edison's Blue Amberall recordings. They were the little cylinders that ranged from kind of bright blue to almost black blue in some ways. And later for his role in a scandal involving a stage name and case of adultery. Van Brunt began his singing career at age 17 as an imitator of singer Billy Murray. There was a Billy Murray. There was another Bill Murray back in the day. He was soon performing with Ada Jones and John Beeling, or is it Beiling, as well as the American Quartet. He worked in vaudeville on Broadway, including in the musical Eileen. Van Brunt had 40 hits on pop charts, including his 1914 duet When the Green Leaves Turn to Gold with Elizabeth Spencer. In the late 1910s, Van Brunt began embroiling himself in a scandal which shook Broadway and put his career into decline. Yeah. The difficulties started in 1917 when Van Brunt began using the name Walter J. Scanlon to assume the identity of Irish tenor Walter J. Scanlon, who had an established career before dying without making a record. You get that? Allegations were raised but never proved that Eileen's Irish-American conductor Victor Herbert had encouraged the subterfuge. All right, so this is big Hollywood scandal stuff here going on. He, for some reason or other, took the name of someone who had deceased, who was popular but never put anything on record. And anyway, here we go. The scandal became overlapped with Van Brunt's bigamy with a woman known as Ruth Scanlon, siring a child with her and prompting his wife, Lillian, to sue for divorce, which was granted in 1925 by an Irish-American judge. And the rest is kind of history, I guess. So let's hear that now. Yaka Hula Hiki Dula from Walter Van Brunt on our Exquisite Corpse Diamond Disc special.
Once again you sway my heart your way. would love to say. If you'd ever see how those hulas bend and sway. Yakahoola hicky doola, yakahoola hicky doola. Down the Hawaii way, while the breakers play, with a movement just like the waves, those hulas say. Yakahoola hicky doola, yakahoola hicky doola. Oh, I don't care if you've never, never loved before. You'll be captivated on that coral shore. Yakahoola hicky doola, yakahoola hicky doola. I'm coming back to you, my hulaloo. Beside the sea at Waikiki, you'll play for me. And once again you sway my heart your way with your yakahoola hicky doola tune. At Waikiki, you'll play for me. With your yakahoola hicky doola tune.
Okay, a little interesting aside about that track I should tell you about was that it's one of the tracks I was playing that started to slow down on me. The spring in the wind up machine started to wear down. So at the end there, I ran these tracks through my acid program to clean them up slightly, maybe change the EQ a little bit. They're pretty much faithful to how you hear it on you know, sitting in front of it. But the last bit there, I took the last few seconds and turned the pitch up a semitone so that you wouldn't hear the slowdown as dramatically as it was. Anyway, little aside you didn't need to know about, but there you go. Anyway, probably have to re-record that sometime. A lot of these things can be found on certain websites. There's a bunch of people out there, God bless them, who take a lot of the Edison cylinders, cylinders from all the companies, and have a cylinder preservation project, which is really cool. I am a big fan of what they're doing, and they have a lot of stuff online. A lot of these tracks are sold. They are now in the public domain, I believe. Some of these things, too, can also be found on Internet Archive. The Internet Archive. Lots of free materials there to download. I think it's wonderful stuff. I don't know if you're getting that, but that's the way it is. We just heard Walter Van Brunt there. He recorded a lot of material back in the day, you know. Those were from, that was from 1916, and he went, his reputation was kind of dragged through the mud for a few years there, but from 1929 to 1933, Van Brunt's career was partially rescued by Billy Murray, because Billy Murray brought him in and used him on various radio programs that he was on, evidently, so I think he came out all right in the end. I don't know. Now, we've got a track here that is, when I started to study this one, I came up with a character that was so colorful and audacious, and it was sort of a mix between Victor Borge and Salvador Dali, if you know what I'm getting at. It was a pianist in a way that Victor Borge was very unorthodox, humorous, and had a Salvador Dali kind of stash going on, and a very colorful character, as I said. His name was Herschel Handler, He did a track for a movie that came out. What year was that? Was it 1920? Well, let's read. Kismet was Guido Diero's only hit song. The word kismet comes from the Arabic kismet and means fate or destiny. Kismet was the theme song in the Robertson Cole Broadway musical play of the same name, written by the well-known playwright Edward Knobloch. Is it Knobloch? I think it's just Knobloch. The highly successful Kismet opened on December 25th, 1911, and ran until 1914. So there you go, 1911, I guess. Track would be from. Sheet music apparently was not published until 1920 by Will Rossiter of Chicago in a piano vocal arrangement by Henry Klickman. The lyrics by Herschel Henlair, who played piano early on the vaudeville circuit and became an arranger and musical director for films in the early days of Hollywood, depict the suffering of a woman who was sold into the harem of an Arabian sheik. So, also, a little bit more on Herschel Henlair, since he was such an interesting character. He was a novelty pianist, composer, parodist, comedian, Herschel Henlair, 1890 to 1968. From Galt, Ontario, evidently. I don't know. That's kind of, I don't know. That's fable. Was part of a wave of Canadian artists that included Maud Allan, Beatrice Lilly, and Guy Lombardo, who performed in British Music Hall and in Variety in the period 1890 to 1940. Although largely forgotten today, Henlair was popular, was a popular performer on the British Music Hall scene. It just said the same thing. Well, from 1920 to 1940. An eccentric comedian billed as the well-known French-Canadian pianist, entertainer, and the mirthful music master, and shockingly known as Jizz, signifying jazz and semen. Henlair was notorious for running long and typically appeared last on the bill so the curtain could close on him. A Salvador Dali lookalike, he drew on surrealist and Dada aesthetics and on the ragtime, jazz, big band, and dance hall phenomena that were then sweeping Britain. Experimenting with percussive sound, he anticipated the prepared piano of John Cage. Henlair secured an original creative agency for himself. And it goes on. Look up Herschel Henlair. Interesting stuff about Herschel Henlair. Shall we move on now? Did I play that yet? No, we're just getting into it here. Herschel Henlair. I can't find it. You know what? I'm going to go to a message and get back to that. So just hang in there for a sec. Because we're overdue on messages anyway. Okay. This is CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver. Exquisite Corpse Radio.
This is Naomi Shelton and the Gospel Queens of Brooklyn. You are listening to 101.9 FM CITR.
The Advocacy Office provides confidential and free representation, guidance, and assistance to students engaged in conflict with UBC. We advocate for students in preparing and attending formal meetings, hearings, and appeals against the university. Specifically, our office helps students with matters of student discipline, such as cheating, collaboration, or plagiarism, assigned standing, admissions, and financial assistance. We can also assist you in appeals to decisions made by UBC Library, parking, or housing. You are not alone. We're here to help. For more information, call 822-9855 or visit the website at www.ams.ubc.ca/advocacy.
If it makes noise, it has some merit.
He creates this outcry.
this clamor. He creates this nightmare of noise.
If it makes noise, it has some merit.
He's a sonic mess, basically. The discordant notes are just a hubbub, a cacophony.
If it makes noise, it has some merit.
He creates a disturbance because he's basically disturbed.
If it makes noise, it has some merit.
Basically, this is a worthless racket. The man is mentally incompetent.
For the most ear-splitting forays into noise, prog, early industrial, no wave, plunderphonic, psych, and altogether way out sound, tune into A Noise with your host Luke Meat every Wednesday from 11:30 a.m. to 1 p.m. on CITR 101.9 FM. A Noise, music that isn't in its right mind.
Now, we just got done telling you about Herschel Handler's writing of Kismet, and we have a recording from our Edison Diamond discs. Okay, this is from 1920. It is played by the Green Brothers Novelty Band, right? And this is for the 1920 recording, evidently. So, Kismet.
Thank you. white man through effort land on the Hokomoko Isle. What's that big shame if the shipwreck came with his great big Irish smile? The natives found him, gathered around him, and began to sing. They took his throat, put a ring in his nose, and then they found him king. He ruled a while upon the island, and he sent a note to a girl so grand in Ireland. He wrote, won't you come out to the Isle of Hokomoko, Kimioko? See your mambo riding on a jumbo, Kimiombo. It's great to be a king, that's true. I give my crown for an Irish stew. Sure they've got me loco in the coco. My sweet Carlino, come and be my queen-o, Kimino. We'll get married on a crocodile. And for the ring here, I suppose we'll lose the one that made my nose on the Hokomoko Isle. Sure, Paddy wrote, they got my gold for the meals here, it's no fun. It's coconuts and coconuts, and I almost look like one. But oh, their dances, oh, their prances, you can take my tip. They kick so high that they wouldn't pass by the board of censorship. My Irish bros, don't pack your clothes before, of course you leave. Cause you can guess out here they dress like Eve. Won't you come out to the Isle of Hokomoko, Kimioko? See your mambo riding on a jumbo, Kimiombo. It's great to be a king, that's true, but I'd give my crown for an Irish stew. Sure they've got me loco
in the coco.
My sweet Carlino, come and be my queen, oh, Kimino. We'll get married on a crocodile. Don't worry here about the shine, they all wear a happy smile on the Hokomoko Isle. Won't you come out to the Isle of Hokomoko, Kimioko? See your mambo riding on a jumbo, Kimiombo. And zang, glugurugu mugurugu, and zang, glugurugu mugurugu, glup, 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 glup. My sweet Carlino, come and be my queen-o, Kimino. We'll get married on a crocodile. Bring along your mother, dear. The cannibals are hungry here on the Hokomoko Isle.
Okay, yeah, got a little lost there in the shuffle, but we found Arthur Collins in the mix. Arthur Collins on the Hokomoko Isle. Arthur Collins, a little more about him, was an American singer who recorded a significant amount of early records with tenor singer Byron G. Harlan. Collins recorded the first song to refer to jazz. You think that's true? That could be. Collins recorded the first, listen to that again. Collins recorded the first song referred to as jazz. That funny as jazz band from Dixieland, back when they spelled jazz with a, like, J-A-S. Copyrighted from November 8, 1916. That last record we heard was also from 1916 on the Hokomoko Isle. And that is from our, once again, in case you just tuned in, we're doing a special on the Edison Diamond Disc. I set up a microphone in front of my Edison phonograph and started to record some of the records that I got. Luckily enough, when I purchased the machine, it came loaded with records. And diamond discs, I soon learned, were a much different animal than the usual 78s. So we went over some of that history and ephemera and whatnot. And we're playing the bands from that label. Now, I'm going to decide what we're going to hear next. Oh, we got Cat's Whiskers for you now. It's a drag foxtrot, whatever that means, drag foxtrot, from Fred Tibbett and G-Rex Anstead Gladstone. I don't know, it's a bunch of names. The Jazzo Harmonists is the band that plays this, Cat's Whiskers. So it's a cool track, lots of fun. We're moving into that now on Exquisite Corpse Radio.
Learning Exchange Trek program wants you to get involved in your community. Learn about important social issues while volunteering at inner-city schools or nonprofit organizations. You'll also get to meet other UBC students in a fun and supportive environment. See how your talent and skills can make a difference in your community. Participate throughout the term or during Reading Week. Check out www.learningexchange.ubc.ca/CITR to find out more.
I will listen to you. These are my heroes. They work hard and they give back and they keep going without complaint.
All right, Exquisite Corpse tonight on CITR 101.9 FM Vancouver Radio at its finest, and you're listening to Canada's favorite radio show. I'm your host, DJ Bleak, and we're going into one of my eccentricities, which is antique sound equipment. And I have this beautiful diamond disc player that I recorded off of last weekend. I keep telling you that, but I keep saying that for people who are maybe just tuning in and don't know what happened to the show. Like, where did it go? Just indulge me this once, okay? 1 week. In the future, I am planning a show on the earliest recordings ever made and the early and the recordings, the how would you call this? The holy grail of recorded works that have been unearthed, also known as the Julius Block cylinders, and we'll be taking a look at the earliest sounds ever produced that weren't meant to be played as audio files, but that have been made into audio files. It's hard to explain, but once we do that, this is probably weeks into the future here, so bear with me. We'll be getting to it eventually. Got a band here called Sodero's Band. It was a very popular band on the Edison label. It did a lot of kooky stuff. Sodero had a final say on repertoire he recorded rather than Thomas Edison, and this was a pretty rare thing since Edison usually stepped in and controlled the whole deal. But Sodero was evidently so influential that he was able to say, go with it. Sodero's instrumental recordings are some of the most colorful and imaginative of the entire acoustical recording era. He achieved significance as a pioneer in the broadcast of opera, directing a series of 53 works in tabloid form for NBC in 1926. From then until 1934, he also conducted several hundred symphonies, symphonic concerts for the network. He then became music director for the Mutual Network. Served as a conductor for Mendelssohn Glee Club of New York, having worked for most of his career in the relatively invisible fields of recording and radio. Sodero was surprisingly appointed as one of the principal conductors at the Metropolitan Opera. That's in New York. In 1942, on account of a wartime shortage of suitable conducting personnel at the Met's Italian wing. About that. His Met debut, Aida, on November 28th, was highly successful, and critics praised Sodero's precise, powerful, yet lyrical direction. He worked steadily and successfully with the company until his death. Sodero's Band on Edison Diamond Disc. And I forgot the name of the track already. Come on. Cuddles Characteristics. Cuddles Characteristic. Okay. Bear with me. Here we go.
Thank you.
Oh, okay. New York military band there from Edison Diamond disc from 1915. Composition by Murphy Lamp. And I don't have too much information on that. Murphy Lamp has a bit of a bio in somewhere, maybe on Wiki or somewhere. On My Way to Dublin Bay, Humorous Patrol. That was from New York Military Band. Got one more track to give to you tonight, and it is a piece out of vaudeville. There's a record that I have in my collection. It's got a piece by Justine Roberts that we're going to hear called The Shop Girl. I don't have much information on Justine Roberts at all that I could find anywhere. It's a department store scene skit. Like I said, it's a vaudeville era track. And there's another track on the other side that is so offensively racist that it really reminds you of the institutionalized racism of the day when nobody thought a thing about using the N-word and, Amos and Andy and all that. Maybe you know about that. But I decided not to get to that tonight, for obvious reasons. Justine Roberts, though, now. The Shop Girl. And until next week, my friends, remember, the future is bleak. Next week's show, Canada Day, all Canadian. So join us, won't you?
Just went out to lunch.
Such impudence. Where's the floor walker?
Over by the hosiery. The tall, dignified gent with the black mustache. Shall I call him for ya? Mr. Watkins. Mr. Watkins? Oh, Mr. Watkins, this lady wants to speak to you.
Why, Mr. Floor walker, I want you to know that this salesperson has just been very impudent to me.
Why, the idea. Mary, consider yourself severely rebuked. Madam, it'll never occur again.
Not to me, at any rate.
Gee, did you hear her call me a salesperson? I should worry about her. It's imperial to me whether she reports me or not. I don't have to work here, and I ain't tied here by no heartstrings, neither. Them kind of women gets my angora. Oh, gee, Annie, quick, drop everything and look what's coming. What do you have, lady?
Say, young lady, I want to get a hat for me little boy.
For Dora?
No, for Danny.
Oh, you'll find them on the magazine balcony. Gee, Annie, did you hear that? Say, did I tell you about seeing Katie Slimmer? Yeah, she had on one of them Dolly Parton hats with that face of hers. I ain't got nothing against that girl, but if I had her face, I would have cooked cine-eyed of Hopatrium long ago. Oh, she works for a chiropodist down 6th Avenue. Don't you know what a chiropodist is, you ignorant thing? Well, it's a feet manicure, you dumbbell.
Hey, cutie, where can I get a silver teapot?
Do you want it solid?
No, want to put tea in it.
Oh, in the Hardingware. Gee, Annie, I wonder where he come from. Green Bean Corners? Where's that techie to get his papa wrapped? Every time I need that kid, she's draped over some other counter cabin. $2.98, please. Now, where's that wandering ivy? Oh, here it comes. Ain't it sweet? It's cross-eyed and bandy-legged, but outside of that, it's a dream. Hurry up, Tess. The lady wants to take a midnight train. Gee, Annie, you ain't got no color today. Didn't you put no rouge on this morning? Say, where did you eat your lunch? The beefsteak Charlie's. Gee, they soak you 15 cents for a ham sandwich. Here's your change, lady. The Fairy Queen ain't got back with your parcel yet. Oh, me and Minnie went to Blind Jim. And honest to goodness, them crabs we had was fried in excellent.